Welcome to this episode of Wipe Out Tales from Superyacht Laundry. I am joined today by Joanna Drysdale. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I've been wanting to get you on for a while because Joanna is Director of Underwriting for MHG. Now, unfortunately, lots of crew members that are on board might not know who you are or what you do or the company name, unfortunately, because having listened to a lot of experiences and talking to crew, there is a bit of a gap with understanding how boats function and who's looking out for you. And that's why I've been really keen to get you on, because I really want female crewmates especially to understand the environment that they're working in. So yeah, I'm excited to talk about insurance. You know, who's...
Has anyone said that before?
Am I a weirdo? It's obviously...
I like to think of us as dorks, Sheree. It's not weirdos.
I'm literally an ultra nerd. I'm a bit of a jack. I collect lots of information, but we were joking just before we came on that I know what an underwriter is, because I live with my husband and my husband talks to individuals like yourself on it a lot. I didn't voluntarily go and look for what an underwriter is. It's just literally happened in my kitchen because my husband doesn't go to the office. So I do know what you are, but we'll get into explaining what you are and what you do a bit later. But obviously with all the podcasts I start, I'm just like, what was Joanna Drysdale doing before she came to the maritime industry? That you're in Scotland, I guess?
Yeah, I grew up in the west of Scotland. I did well at school, went to university, and then promptly had a mental health crisis and dropped out. So I did maybe 1.5 years at university and ended up working in a supermarket. Stacking shelves, living the dream. Go on.
I was going to say, university, like I was talking on a previous episode, university, you know, I was 90s generation and they were just like, everybody should go to uni. I'm like, should we? You know, yeah. And like, yeah, go do anything. And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of people with degrees or they did it for a bit, managed to get into a decent amount of debt and then leave anyway because they were just told that that was the way to go. But for so many people, I mean, I kind of wish I was the generation where they had the different schools, like they'd work out whether you were practical or academic, which sounds really harsh, but it's sorting, you know, you're more likely to succeed if you're kind of, at least you're breaking it down into academic and practical.
Yeah, I think it's pretty harsh to ask kids to know what they want to be when they're 15, 16, 17. I went and did English at university because I didn't know what else to do. Yeah. I had no aspirations. Shy, introverted, no good social skills at that point. So all of those probably contributed to me crashing and burning, to be honest. And I actually think it's the best thing that could have happened. Sent me down to the bottom of the pile and give me somewhere to start from.
It's quite interesting, you know, starting from the beginning, but I do agree, like, how do you know? Unless you're one of those lucky kids that has a thing, you know, a thing that they're good at or they're passionate about, you know, I don't know, apart from the social life. But if you're not into that kind of social life of uni, it's a very expensive day at night out, really, because you're only there, you know, even with the student discount in the bars and stuff, it's not really, you know, not really worth it. So you had to reimagine yourself all over again.
I didn't know that's what I was doing, though. I just thought I was stuck working at the supermarket for the rest of my life. And what actually changed it was bumping into my boyfriend, who became my other half, who soon after we met and got together, moved to the Isle of Man.
Oh,
and
wow.
I thought, well, I'm working in a supermarket. Let's not kid ourselves here. We haven't got anything to stop us. So I moved to the Isle of Man with him, and the first job that accepted me was a general insurance broker, and that's where my insurance career started.
Wow. So how old were you then when you decided to move to the Isle of Man?
I was 22.
You're not a million miles away from Scotland, is it?
No, but it might as well have been for me. Leaving my mum behind, leaving all my friends, and also it's longer. If you live on a, you've been living on an island before, you know it's longer than you. It's longer in your head than it is in practicality to get back home. But yeah.
What's the highlights of living in the island? Because it is beautiful. It's a bit windy up that way. Weather's
yeah.
You're on the wrong side, really, aren't you? Isle of Man's the windy side.
The weather is grim over the winter, that's for sure. But it's a stunning place to live. The landscapes, the beaches, the art and culture. There's some lovely restaurants. The people are great, largely. And obviously it's a low tax jurisdiction, so I could afford to buy a house earlier. I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't moved here, honestly.
That's quite amazing, isn't it? I forget that you're the little islands. They've got different tax rules.
Mm-hmm.
Little islands.
We're very heavily regulated, though. We can't get away with half the stuff they get away with in other places.
Well, that changed, though, didn't it? It was a little bit, you know, for years and years. But that was even pre 2008. They started locking it down a little bit more, didn't they? Was it Guernsey
It's an ongoing process. It's the Moneyval and FATCA and all these anti-money laundering organisations. They audit us now, and we have to stay on the right side of good and evil if we want to stay on a white list and not go on a grey list. So,
but so anybody who's young will and just won't know that obviously back in the day with yachties, you used to be offered like you need an offshore bank account because that's kind of what everybody was told that they needed. An Isle of Man, Guernsey, is it Standard Bank that used to kind of work out there? But
yeah,
that was quite common that everybody had their funds over there, but then that got nipped in the bud.
I think a fair number of people still do. A Standard Bank are still here. It's less of a money saving operation now. Yep. And it's just, I think it's more that lots of yacht crew don't actually have a proper domicile. So they just get a bank account anywhere they can.
So you're on the Isle of Man and you're enjoying the beaches, you know, the few months of the year that it's actually nice weather. And you landed in insurance. Did you like it, like, straight away? Or was it just a means to an end at the start?
It was very much kind of thrown in the deep end in a busy kind of retail insurance broker. So I had to learn really quickly, and I loved dealing with people. I loved helping people. And I've got a bit of an A student mentality. So I did all the learning and all the exams and everything, and made some lifelong friends in that place. But when it came to eight years down the line, someone that I know asked me to come and interview for this position, so I did.
So was that to move over to marine insurance?
I had no idea what it was. My dear friend Kathy was asked to set up the Isle of Man branch of MHG, and she said you should come and interview to come and help us start this. And I looked at their website. Employee benefits, what even is that? Even after the interview, I was like, I'm really not sure what it is I'm going to be doing here. But yeah, we started with just the two of us on the Isle of Man, and we've kind of added people to the stage we're at now, which is about 8 or 10 people here, depending on the time of year.
It's quite like, that's a big leap for somebody, but you've already done one leap to, like, you know, get your boyfriend, move to the Isle of Man, get a job in insurance. Next leap is to go and work in an industry that you didn't know anything about. It was just like boats.
I honestly had no idea. I just saw they worked with cruise lines and yachts, and it was something to do with medical insurance and life insurance, and that was it. I had no clear idea of what they did or how they did it. And it honestly, it took me a couple of years to get my head around that after I got the job.
It's insurance is insurance, no? We just change a few
words. Yeah, but the subject matter is much more interesting than car insurance and home insurance, which I was doing before. And what I love about it actually is the opportunity to actually help people with what you're doing. You know, Hull & Machinery and P&I to an extent, it's quite faceless. You're not actually getting involved in helping people day to day, but we actually are, because the medical insurance side is a personal investment. Whether even if it's provided by the employer, the crew members are personally invested in it. So it's nice. It's nice to be able to help people, and it's nice to be able to, you know, look online and see the massive yachts and think that's what we're doing day to day.
So what were your first impressions? Because, you know, it's obviously being a yachty myself. Like, we have any first impressions about... Because I imagine you're dealing with captains or most of the time.
I deal mainly with brokers, actually, insurance brokers. We deal directly with captains maybe 5 or 10% of the time. And I really feel for captains, actually, because the crew insurance world is super complicated. No two plans are the same, and they're being asked to make a really consequential decision with very little time to make it and very little information at their fingertips. So I feel very sorry for captains for having to deal with that on their own. If I'm left face to face with a captain, I will sit there for 3 hours with him if I need to tell him everything he wants to know. Because there's so many ins and outs that they need to get their heads around.
Do you think captains should be an opportunity to educate them more when it comes to stuff like that?
Like, for sure.
You know, it's not, obviously it won't be a requirement. They will just have to have insurance, I imagine, a part of what they're doing, not actual education on what they should be looking for within insurance for crew welfare on board.
I think I actually spoke to a captain last week. He was giving us some advice on how our brand was going and how to approach sales and education and stuff. And he thought that captains needed more detail, more information. But the question is, how do you get it to them? They're so busy. And you know, we put out infographics and we do videos and we do social media, but getting the key points to a captain about the differences between this plan and that plan that will really affect your crew, that is really hard to get to cut through that message.
But I suppose as well as you're using a broker, you're not dealing with them firsthand most of the time. But then it's like everything. Nobody looks at their insurance policy until they crash their car. You know, yeah. Like it's something...
Even then,
you sign, I'm sure it'll be fine, you know, if I crash it, whatever. Nobody really looks at the detail until they have to. But do you think with crew welfare, with everything that's going on, it might be a better idea to start thinking more of education within the industry and then being a bit more friendly towards it? Like, you are creating, you know, from your perspective, you're creating resource for them to use, but it's not really being highlighted as a priority of what they should be doing.
Yeah, I think obviously people buy insurance for all sorts of different reasons. Some owners don't want to spend a lot of money. They just want to cover their losses and that's it. Others want to provide a benefit that encourages crew to come and work for them and keeps them after they've taken the job. And what matters, what I would like captains and owners, reps and whoever to focus on is what matters to you. What elements matter to you? Do you want to be able to support a crew member who becomes pregnant? Make sure you've got maternity cover. Do you want to make sure crew members can access mental health coverage without having to speak to an HOD? Make sure you've got a named policy. So basically write down the things that are important. Have a think about the things that are important to you and then tell your broker, get me this. And they will.
That's it. That's so really so. That's that's empowering captains to, you know, they are the ones that could spearhead change by demanding. Because my interest, let's be honest, if I come with you a list, I want to be covered for all of these things, you will just try and make it happen. that you'll get cover. It depends on what it is. The price obviously varies if it's something very specific, but most of the time you'll manage to cover it.
There's a spectrum of policies available from very cheap to very expensive. And the very cheap ones, bad cover in the USA, they're not named, they don't cover home country. And that's fine. That plan is fine for the owner who needs that plan. The super expensive ones cover US expenses, unlimited, they cover pre-existing conditions, they're named, all of that. And there's a whole spectrum in between. And lots of captains, they'll look at a plan, look at two plans, they both have $1 million limit. One is twice the price of the other. And they think, well, of course, I'll take the cheaper one. But what they don't know is there are so many differences between practical, important differences, not covering alcohol injuries. That's a big one.
Travel injuries, like Decky goes skiing because they're based in Barcelona, breaks his leg, all of those kind of things.
There's so many.
Do you think experienced captains know to look for stuff like that, having been through, those salty sea dogs that have been around for a very long time and have seen probably everything from crashing the crew car to somebody smashing the ankle in hot store? Do you know what I mean? Do they know to ask? Is it something that they just need to experience to then know to ask the question?
I think it depends what insurance they've had before and what experiences they've had with insurers before. If they've only ever had a basic plan, they won't have a concept of what a more comprehensive plan would cover. And for example, we often find if captains have had MHG coverage before, they will ask for us again. But getting your foot in the door with a captain who's never had MHG cover can be quite difficult because the price differential can often be quite substantial. So, and I just want to reinforce the point that the expensive cover isn't always what the client needs or wants, and their broker should advise them on whether they need the cheap policy or whether they should take the expensive policy.
Well, I suppose it's a balancing act between the owner and the captain. These are the minimum, it's like setting standards on board. These are the minimum standards of cover that I would like for my crew to obviously make sure we keep morale and everything else. And obviously, obviously everybody wants, for some reason, wants to save the boss a few quid. They're always obsessed with it. But it's, I suppose, standing your ground, having the confidence to stand your ground and kind of have a minimum requirement. I mean, new things are coming up, it's generally known that if you get pregnant on board, that's it. I've not heard of many boats that will even let you stay on and work during the first two trimesters. Generally, the rule of is you've got to get off. Do many boats actually opt to have that?
I think it often, once a crew member starts working while pregnant, she often ends up with a different idea of what she wants than when she first found out she was pregnant. It's harder than she thought it would be managing the symptom. She has severe morning sickness or fatigue or whatever. She often finds out it's harder than she thought it would be. Or hormonal changes will make her just want to be near her family or anything like that. And that's it depends from crew member to crew member. And you also have to remember there are some crew members who will, from cultures where they will become pregnant, have their child and come back to work. They'll send Filipino crew members, Indian crew members. We often find they are sending their money home to support their entire family. So it's not a foregone conclusion that the crew member will not need to be supported through the delivery and beyond if you want to keep her, that is.
That's quite mad, isn't it? Thinking of cultural differences, because you just, my head, it's just like Western women, they get pregnant, they have to get off and start the family life. Not thinking that obviously in Asia, you do have individuals that they work in St. That's not just on yachts though, is it? That's cruise ships as well. They'll go back to working at sea and somebody else is raising once they've got those jobs, which are really sought after, from my understanding, they'll go back and leave. I mean, it's very hard to imagine having to do that, as a woman, but you've got to do what you've got to do for your family. And like you said, they're supporting grandparents, you know, could be supporting all sorts with that kind of
an money. Entire village, maybe. I've heard of that. I don't know if that's culturally insensitive of me to say, but no. The other thing to bear in mind is there are non-standard families now. There are families where the mother, where the person who bore the child will return to work and the other partner will look after the child. So we shouldn't make assumptions about how much support a crew member will need through their pregnancy.
Well, it's also with the change in attitudes and obviously more female captains coming to, you know, hopefully motherhood would still be an option to them, which, like you said, they would, you know, be the breadwinner, so they would have to go back to work and have a different family dynamic. Do you think that's like with these, obviously these are changes in culture and stuff like that, there's obviously more Asian crew members coming into the yachting world, especially with, unfortunately, the size of the boats getting bigger. Do you think there's a bit of a change in the requirements of boats? Are they starting to take, you know, the cover of pregnancy more seriously, or at least having the option?
I'm not seeing any evidence of that, really. But then I wouldn't, because all of our plans include maternity cover. So someone who doesn't want a plan like ours, I'm not going to come across them. I guess if the other more the other plans, which are more focused on owners' losses, might have more inquiries about adding maternity or including maternity. But also it's something that, like you say, they just assume isn't covered, and they just assume the crew member's going to have to go. If more people ask about it and more crew members stand up and say, how are you going to support me through this, then more captains will think about it, more ownerships will think about it.
Well, yeah, I suppose we're getting a bit of ahead of ourselves with we're talking about a specific issue like pregnancy. Now, one of the reasons why I wanted to get you on was because I don't think people fully understand boat insurance and how, you know, what it actually offers. So obviously I've spoken to yourself, and I've spoken to obviously other companies that do similar things to you. And to be fair to you guys, I think sometimes you get a bit of a bad rep because people just assume that you're not covering stuff when you've actually got some incredible offerings, and a lot of boats are taking them up. So I just wanted to highlight that. But let's start at the beginning. What is an underwriter?
Well, I will hold my hands up and say, not me. I'm director of underwriting services. So I'm organising the features of our plans, liaising with underwriters, liaising with crew, liaising with other brokers. I'm running the thing on a relatively high level. The underwriters are usually guys with maths experience, and they have actuaries with statistical expertise behind them telling them what to charge. So I think the most important thing to know about an underwriter is our largest plan in Europe is underwritten by Lloyd's, a couple of syndicates at Lloyd's. And the most important feature of the underwriter that we have a relationship with is he knows the industry. He's been working on the yacht crew insurance for 15 years. So he understands what he's doing. He listens to our expertise, and we have a mutually respectful and friendly, and we've got mutual admiration for each other. So I think that's the most important thing about our underwriter. That allows us to do things like cover adventurous activities, cover alcohol injuries, cover maternity in the way we do. We're excluding almost nothing. We have exclusions, but what we're trying to do is cover things and not exclude them. So some insurers will go, okay, we had a hoverboard accident that cost us $50,000. Let's put an exclusion in the plan for that now. We're not doing things like that.
Is it like an underwriter is obviously working out the chances of you X smashing it. They basically just work on stats. Are you most likely to die? And this is quite an interesting thing when it comes to you guys, like you saying that you've got a specialist person, because you've had to educate that individual on what the actual industry is. I know this firsthand because my husband's done the same for like the personal side. Like, he's literally had to talk to these people and say, it's not like Deadliest Catch. They're not going into battle. Do you know what I mean? It's not like they're on deck and it's all, you know, storms and like scene of the apocalypse kind of thing. So it really is incredible how it takes a lot of effort to get the right kind of cover, because you've got to go through such a massive process to get them to actually, because nobody really understands, well, we all know this, nobody really gets, obviously Below Deck kind of gives an indication, but nobody really understands what the industry is and what the day-to-day experience and working environment is. It takes time to build that understanding.
Definitely. So the underwriter only has numbers. He has total amount claimed, total premium income, is it more or less?
Yeah.
And what we provide them with is the context and the understanding, like you say. And you've got to build up a bit of mutual trust, because when you're starting out with a plan like this, the chances are you're going to have a big claim in the first year that's going to wipe out all of the premium that you've collected. And you've got to have an underwriter that you can go, okay, just wait.
Please just wait. Like this.
Give us a few years, we'll build up some premium income. And actually, that's one of the nicest things about working for MHG is we have large books. So we cover a lot of crew and we have a lot of sway with the underwriters, so we can get decisions that might not otherwise have occurred.
They trust what you're saying. You're like, it's not like that. And they're like, okay, we kind of get it, but like we will go with what you're saying that it's not. And obviously it's worked out exactly the way that you've explained it. So it is kind of, I don't think people understand that you're kind of the pioneers of making life better for everybody. You know what I mean?
We actually are. My boss, Andrew, our owner, Andrew Dudinsky, will love you for that, because he is fond of saying that MHG pioneered crew benefits in the cruise and the yacht industry.
Yeah.
He's going to be absolutely living the life right now if he sees.
Well, this is the thing. Like, obviously, I'm a bit of an anomaly because I actually understand what you do, and that's why, you know, I thought it's really important that people just try to get their head around what you guys actually do, because unfortunately, I don't think, because of that lack of understanding, people aren't tapping into what's being provided. Because there are a lot of boats that are doing really good things out there. You're providing incredible products, but it's not being accessed. Which means that crew don't realize how protected they are. So they might not be, you know, they might not coming to their captain with the right, you know, with the right issue. They think they have to go and sort it out for themselves. But anyway, we'll get on to all of those kind of things. But I do think it is important to, like I said before, because people don't understand, it's not that you're getting a bad rep, but because they don't understand, they're just assuming that you're not, and that's not the case. When we did a event on Teeb, and I did my panel discussion talking specifically about women's issues, and we did the case studies of like a rape and bullying and things like that, there was, you know, like one of the first things that was mentioned is like, obviously you can do someone like Medair, that they do provide an amount of mental health support and things like that, and crisis cover and stuff like that. But obviously you also should, you know, if that boat's got the right plan, you can also support in those ways and for longer than generally the crisis care can with Medair and stuff like that. So it's really educating crew on what to ask. So going on to crew, what are the three things, if you can name three things that annoy you because crew either don't know, don't understand, that just keep coming up all the time, that as a company you'd perhaps quite like to, you know, help them?
I wouldn't say I'm annoyed, but I think that the culture in yachting is to listen to what everyone else is telling you rather than look into it yourself. So-and-so says you can't claim for routine dental on the plan, or it's not something that's ever covered, or, you have to pre-notify that particular treatment, or insurance companies just never pay out, so you might as well not. The received wisdom thing is quite a problem. I think, you know, if you have any crew insurance cover with anyone, MHG or not, just ask for a copy of the policy. Often there will be a summary of the cover, which is broken down in a much more digestible format than the policy wording, because policy wordings can be horrible, dense, written in legalese.
Nobody wants to read the small print. It's so long. Oh, well, my husband does, but like, he's weird.
I hate it. I even hate it. I use AI now to compare policies because I'm too old for this now. My eyesight is too bad.
I don't want to read that much.
I'm bored of it now. ask for a summary of cover, and if you're not sure, use the contact details and ask the question. The majority of the time, there'll be someone absolutely delighted to help you, because we're sitting behind our desks looking at screens all day, and when someone actually calls up, we can be useful. We absolutely love it. So
it is. Like I said, there is a misunderstanding a lot of the times. And obviously we talked about captains. I think captains need to pass on the responsibility a little bit as well. Like, you know, apart from being the all-seeing oracle of the boat kind of thing, you know, if, I don't know whether it's practice that, you know, that more digestible version of what's offered is given to crew so they can, you know, if you do have an issue, this is what our cover will cover, and then also confirm it, get it clarified, and not be scared. You know, like, if you claim on the insurance, you know, it's, that's what it's designed to do. I know obviously on land we have the, you know, it's like when you dink your car, do you want to lose your no claims? That doesn't exist on board.
I think, yeah, even captains often think that if they're fearful of letting go of the reins because the crew members will run amok. And don't get me wrong, there are accounts sometimes where we go, yes, like literally every single crew member has had a go at this. But the vast majority of the time, even if every crew member on board goes and gets their wellness checkups, that's not going to have a terrible impact on your premium at renewal. Because they're relatively inexpensive claims, and they're actually the ones that the crew members value the most. They value the most getting their routine checkups and getting their routine dental paid. The routine dental is probably the most common claim we get. And it's inexpensive to insure, and the crew members really value it. So I think...
Yeah, that's because you can't get a dentist appointment in the UK. Like, I don't know about... I know it's not the case in every other nationality, but in the UK, like... Dental, oh my god, like, yeah, I wish I'd known. I probably would have, like, my favorite captain, I would have been like, Captain Steve, like, is there any dental? Like,
I think you can afford, what I'm saying is, you can afford to let go of the reins a little bit. You can impress upon them that it's not to be abused, that this is the owner's money you're spending and all of that stuff, and I'm sure they do. But they can, our plans for sure can be accessed independently by the crew members without anyone else being involved. So they can do that if they want to.
I think that's an important thing as well. Like, captains get to a point where they're that confident with and their understanding of what you provide, and also highlighting, you know, what they want to limit to you. You can work together, and then, you know, like you said, give a bit of free rein and personal responsibility back to the crew member, so the captain doesn't have to deal with everybody's stuff. You know what I mean? It doesn't need to be his decision. He just needs to be aware if a crew member's accessed it. And I think with the change in what's going on, I mean, obviously you've worked in the maritime. Let's go back. You've obviously the maritime insurance 12 years?
It'll be 14 years this year.
Okay, you need to update your LinkedIn. It's a start. 14 years. How much has changed in 14 years when it comes to crew welfare? Like,
huge amounts, huge amounts. And I actually, I want to be a little bit aggressive here and say that I think a lot of that has changed because of us. We're finding our competitors are changing their plans to mirror the level of cover that we're providing now, which I actually like. That's fine. Bring it on. Because it's not just about the words on the page. It's also about the service that you're providing in the background and the number of claims staff that you have available and all of that. and it isn't improving enough, but there's definitely more attention being paid to mental health provisions on queer insurance. It used to be absolutely uniform to see exclusions for everything mental health.
Really?
Mental and nervous, especially on sick pay. Mental and nervous, because it's so hard to quantify and so hard to measure. Insurers were very nervous of covering sick pay claims for mental and nervous. And I feel like that over the last 10 or so years has kind of crept forward, not by enough. We have beaten up our underwriters. I say beaten up. We've firmly discussed with our underwriters the kind of, and it's driven by our clients, honestly. You know, a couple of yachts came to us and said, your mental health limits, can you raise them? Because we don't think they're enough. So we went to our underwriters and said, we've got lots of clients telling us this is what they want. Can we increase these limits?
I think it's also like the change in attitude. Like, obviously, if you think about, I mean, just in the last 3 years, how mental health has been viewed on board has changed. But that's attitudes across the board, you know, in wider society. And all industries have to kind of make their peace with it. But there's also the realisation that it is a particular job and it can be very, 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 very tough. But the earlier that you get support if needed, the more likely you are a different change in attitude rather than wait until breaking point and then wanting cover for that. You know, it's kind of stopping the fire before it burns down the house kind of scenario.
And interestingly, I actually looked up some numbers for you before joining the call.
Woo-hoo.
So these numbers are pathetic. And in 10 years, we've only had 162 claimants on mental health benefit.
Wow.
And we have, this is just on our Latitudes program. So our US office does other programs as well that we have a lot of crew insured under. But the Latitudes program that we run from our office in the Isle of Man, we've got over 4,000 crew covered. And we've only had 162 claimants across those 10 years. 70% of the insured population are men, and they make up 40% of the claimants. So the women are only 30% of the population, but they're making up 60% of the claimants.
Wow.
It gets weirder. So the men are claiming more monetarily than the women. They're having more inpatient treatment than the women are. Wow. So the women are claiming more often for smaller amounts, and the men are claiming less frequently for larger amounts. So what does that mean? Does that mean that women aren't staying in the industry long enough to have burnout situations?
Or they just
Does it mean that women are managing their mental health better? Which could be both, because women are more likely to seek help than men. But it's, super, super interesting. I found that.
Or are they bailing earlier? Because obviously from a man's perspective, they might not claim as often, but they're going to be a lot more likely to stay in the industry because that's their career option. You know, it'd be really interesting to find out, is it because these women are just bailing? Like, it's not that, you know, first signs of, you know, not coping or whatever, the claims might be shorter because they're just out. Do you know what I mean? If you have a trauma on board, you know, most logical sense would be. So it'd be really interesting, are there issues more frequently for women, hence why more claiming, or also when these things happen, are they just leave? Oh my God, I love a stat.
It's very interesting. And I can't, unfortunately, tell you any of that stuff you're asking. We don't collect that information.
No.
But I tell you who might be able to collect that information, ISWAN.
Yeah. The yacht crew.
Their data is absolute gold dust. The fact that the Yacht Crew Help platform is operational is absolutely transformational for the yachting industry. We shouldn't be afraid of what's coming out of it. We should be thankful. It's telling us where the problems are, and we have the opportunity to fix it. And I absolutely love it.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can't change until you can see what's happening. You know, you can feel what's happening and you can kind of get an inkling, but until you kind of, you know, in black and white, that's really interesting. I'm really intrigued now. we'll have to. But also, if you get your stats and, you know, another insurance stats, and then you put ICE one stats, you might actually start beginning to see what's going on. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're really ahead of the game to try and fix things, which, you know, is incredible. Hence why I think you guys are really important. Like, people need to be talking to you guys a lot.
One thing I would love to fix is the low take up. I mean, 162 claimants in 10 years is pathetic. We know that from the ICE1 data that crew members need the help, but they're not seeking it through their employer sponsored benefits. Why is that? Are they aware of it? I mean, they have direct access, so they can use it without speaking to HOD.
Is there lots of questions, isn't it? Is that trust element? Do they claim and it will get back? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's and also whether it's been taken seriously, whether, you know, especially from females' perspective, they just try and get them off so as fast as possible, so it doesn't. It's, you know, big questions, and that kind of data, and not just your data, but bringing together other areas as well, you will start to see a picture. Because some of it is not, I'm not trying to imply there's anything sinister, but it's also attitudes and education towards insurance. Like what we said, you know, boat insurance is not like you dink your car and you're going to lose your no claims. You shouldn't look at it in that way. And also understanding from your guys' perspective, you know, you're hopefully helping provide healthy and happy crew on board, because they feel more confident that if there is stuff that goes wrong, they are covered, so they can carry on and work longer and happier and all of that kind of stuff. It's very, very interesting, I have to say. That's why I wanted to get you on.
I feel like I need you to follow me around all day telling me how interesting I am.
Well, yeah. It's just been my... Yeah. Well, I'm, you know, I will wait until the weather's better, but I might be, a jolly that I'll come over in July, because it should be better by then, at least. To come over and really kind of, like I said, it's very, very important, you know, working with what we've got already. Because there's lots of incredible people out there at the moment doing great things, but nobody really understands what truly is there in the first place. You know, not just yourself, you know, when we had Medair on the panel discussion, people didn't really understand what they did either. You know, and I understand, you know, Captain is, you know, the final decision maker, but educating, there's something going awry a little bit, because the crew aren't really understanding their working environment and their working rights, I suppose. Obviously, it's an industry where it can't really have a union as such, although Nautilus tried to obviously fill that gap as best they can. But it's just, you know, it's expanding the educational options for crew just about their own well-being. And I do think you guys will be at the forefront of that, like you already are, but nobody knows that you are.
I think we have a fair amount of
they don't know brand recognition. But no, with management and stuff like that, I think, you know, again, like, do really management companies understand? Because obviously they, you know, they'll know if boats are claiming on the insurance. Do they really understand what you guys do? You know, obviously you try your best, but there's going to, you know, that might not be high on their list of our priorities. And also, again, is there a question about them not wanting to look like they're, you know, calling the family office saying, oh, we've had 25 claims on the boat this year, you know? And
I think it's a tricky conversation to have when the insurance premium goes up by a significant amount and it's because crew have been using the benefits. But it depends on the attitudes of the owner. Like we do have owners who go, good, thanks, pay it. But then there are other owners who are not so happy, and they ask us for input on how we can manage the situation. Like, why are these claims happening? Is there something we can do that will make things better? Can we educate our crew on safety? There's all sorts of different conversations to have.
But the majority of claims, I would probably, and you can correct me, are safety, because most crew aren't necessarily claiming for, like you said, for mental health. So it's all a lot of safety stuff, unless one person gets their teeth done and they're like, oh yeah, let's get then all of this.
There are some things that are contagious. Yeah. We do find in the first year that a client adds wellness and routine dental, all the crew go, oh my god, this is amazing, and then every single crew member absolutely ransacks the benefit.
Been a dentist for a decade.
But then the next year there's nothing. Yeah. So it's a flash in the pan. But I would say that you would think that workplace accidents would be the most common thing, and I think they are that very significant, high cost, high drama. You know, when a piece of equipment goes wrong, or someone falls down a hatch, or whatever, face plants on the passerelle. Honestly, the most common claim is routine dental.
Got to keep those teeth.
That's it.
Those teeth. No, but I would argue that most things that go wrong with your body, obviously, unless it's a medical thing and you need to go to hospital, teeth are the worst, because if you need root canal, you can't, like, it's the worst possible pain, and you will have to get that sorted whether there's guests on board or not. Like, it's not like a pain that you can ignore.
You can't work through that.
No, like, you know, you can't crack a few cocodamol and just keep going until you get into port. You know, if it's, and you don't look attractive, you're like, oh, you know, especially on the interior, nobody wants somebody who looks like that. So it's not really surprising. With your vast knowledge, because you need to kind of wrap this episode up, but we have got you booked in for another episode, and then we'll get into obviously some really nitty gritty about education, where we can take it, what's going on in the industry at the moment. So we'll go into all of that for more detail. So guys, if you're listening to this and you're like, I want to know, we've got another episode that's just going to be a lot more detailed. So we talked about obviously the fantastic Joanna's journey to the Isle of Man. I wanted to ask just some fun questions, like favorite port. Okay, you've got it. You have to go to these shows, Joanna. Which one's your favorite? What ones tempt you off the island?
Honestly, nothing tempts me off the island. I get dragged kicking and screaming to shows. My favourite port, I have to say, is Port Erin in the Isle of Man. I'm sorry. You don't get super yachts there very often.
They're literally down the road.
The sunsets are incredible. You see seals there all the time. You see basking sharks. It's honestly, there's a little cafe right on the beach where you can have mulled wine during the winter.
I'm coming.
It's honestly idyllic.
Like, I'm booking my weekend. I'm going to come over. We'll do some educational stuff, and then you can take me to watch the sunset. It'll be really romantic.
And you can get there via steam train.
train ride as well. I'm in love. Romance will just keep going. All right, I'm going to force you now. You have to pick a super yacht port, okay?
I have to pick a what?
You have to pick a marina that we have to go to for work. Don't pull that back. For you, the guys that are listening, the face you just pulled. You
do. Sorry.
Like, they're not all bad. You know, Palma's all right. I quite like Palma.
I will say that Palma was the nicest, chillest show I've ever been to. Definitely up there. Okay, let's say Palma then.
Palma. Yeah. I don't think you're a Monaco kind of person. You're not giving me those vibes.
Monaco's great. I mean, it's I first went to Monaco show when I was a year in the job. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know anyone, and it was absolutely, I nearly fainted with fright. Yeah, so Monaco's got a place in my heart, but
if the boss said tomorrow, pick one, you're going. You're going to be at Palma in May.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Honestly, if he says pick one, you're going, I would just tell him, no, I'm not going. They keep trying to get me to go to Flibs, and I just go, nah.
Stateside.
Seems like a lot of effort.
Stateside. Yeah. That's a lot of energy over there, I've heard. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We are generally asked, like, have you got any crazy experiences from the yachting world? Did you ever go to a dinner or go to a location? You're just like, this is bonkers. Because you must get invited to all of the really good parties, you know, being in insurance.
I used to. Now that I'm older, I've kind of fallen out of the loop. But I did go to a couple of parties where the entertainment was just bonkers. Like there was women and men dressed up as air stewards and stewardesses, you know, with little hats on, with sharks on leads.
Sharks on
leads, and they were all following each other around like the Blue Man Group almost.
Yeah, yeah.
That was bizarre. Not a party animal. So honestly, the most bonkers thing for me about the industry is just the amount of money that's involved in it. I'll never get over standing on the pontoon at Monaco and looking up at these enormous boats and thinking, I cannot imagine how much money is in front of me here.
It's not even your house. It's not even looking at it. It's not like standing there looking at a mansion like, fair one, you've done all right for yourself, that's your house. You know, no, that's your floating holiday home. You know,
I did go around a yacht called Candyscape once, about 10 years ago, and they had the nicest interior of a yacht I've ever seen. It had a mechanical replica of the solar system on the saloon ceiling that moved. It was all brass. It was amazing. It was totally amazing.
When money's no object, what can you create?
I'm going to stick the solar system on my ceiling.
Why not?
Obviously.
Why not? You know, why not? If you can stick a... You don't, like... There was a few boats... Like one boat had a Picasso and stuff like that. That's not... Again, that's not even in your house. You've got a Picasso, but you're just like, oh, I'll just stick it on the boat. I don't want it in my house. Stick it on the boat. It was crazy. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm very, very excited. I might make you go away and get more stats for our next chat, because obviously we'll get more technical. For those of you that's listening, I hope that's kind of given you a little bit of an understanding overview of where we're going to go next time. Crew knowledge of insurance is very, very important. And especially from a female's perspective. And there is so much that's changing, wouldn't you say, in the next, like constantly, we're updating what's going on for females.
Yeah. Awareness, education.
Yep.
Confidence.
Thank you very much for joining me, Joanna.
It's a huge pleasure. Thank you, Cherise.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Why Pals Tell Some CPO Laundry, there are lots of others, and we have got a hectic recording schedule in the next few months. And yeah, I've just booked myself to go over to see Joanna at the Isle of Man in July, so that'll be another episode. But yes, obviously stay tuned for other episodes. If you want more information about Yacht Pearls of Wisdom, obviously please visit the website. I will also put Joanna's company MHG details on that, and maybe some resources so you can understand where she is and who she works for, and you can go and ask your captain, is this our boat insurer, because they sound really nice. Please check the details below, and we'll see you next time.